Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on your retirement. Is your retirement at risk when we come back? You know, with an income of $50,000, you pay $7,650 in Social Security taxes. That is, if you're self-employed and you're paying the 15.3% Social Security tax. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract $7,650 from your $50,000 and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of $50,000 a second time? But the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of that $50,000 gross income in Social Security tax. That's step one. Then they make you pay 17% of that $50,000 in income tax. That's step two. And that means that you paid 17% of the $7,650 twice. Twice. Two times. And that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and from everyone else that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company charged you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? Well, isn't that just real special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call me here at the law school? Remember the numbers, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package when you call. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's a four-hour commentary that's entertaining, educational, that's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for your free general law CD package. georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about your retirement, your pension program. Everybody dreams of their pension, or of hitting the lottery, driving over the country in your Winnebago, being wealthy, rich. You know, we all have these fantasies. Well, maybe I'm the only guy. I've always said to myself, God, what would I do with $200 million that I won on the lottery? Of course, I'll never win the lottery because I never buy a lottery ticket. Yeah, that's right. I never buy a lottery ticket. And that's because the odds of winning are 84 million to one. Now, I'm not a real smart guy, and I don't know too much about arithmetic and all that kind of stuff, but I'm smart enough to figure out that if I give you a dollar and my chances are 84 million to one, that before I win one time, I'm going to have to give you $84 million, and I don't have $84 million, and if I had $84 million, I wouldn't need to win the lottery. So ain't no point in giving you a buck. Might as well keep it myself. Furthermore, if I take that dollar and I invest it, I can turn it into $2. I've often asked people that here in the class in our business school. I say, let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, that I gave each one of you class members a $1 bill, and I said, occupy till I come. And I'm going to come back in 1 year. And I want to know if you can double that $1. Can you invest it? Can you buy, sell, or trade with it? Could you go out to a flea market and buy an old rusty knife, bring it home, clean it up, and sell it for $2? Could you double that $1? From $1 to $2. Nearly everybody in the class will raise their hands and say, yeah, I can do that. So I say, well, If I gave you $2, could you go out to the flea market and buy two old rusty knives, bring them home, clean them up, and turn around and sell them for $2 each? Everybody looks at that problem and they say, well, yeah, I think I could probably do that. That makes sense. Yeah, I could take $2 and double it to $4. Okay. Well, if I gave you $1 million and said, occupy till I come, I'll be back next year, could you double that $1 million to $2 million in 1 year? And they all look at you like you're Mork from Ork. You got to be stupid. Why, that's impossible. Nobody could double their money in 1 year. Well, wait a minute. If you can double a dollar to $2 in 1 year, why can't you take $1 million and double that to $2 million in 1 year? But you see, everybody can envision buying an old rusty pocket knife at a flea market for a dollar and selling that to their friend Joe for two. They cannot imagine selling something for $2 million. Donald Trump does it every day. Probably doesn't sell a $2 million deal every day, but I'll bet you he makes a $2 million deal once a year. I'll bet you that Donald Trump buys a building for $1 million and does something to it and fixes it up or builds a new project and sells it for $2 million and doubles his money. And after all, that's what business and entrepreneurs do in life. That's a job of an entrepreneur. It's to take something that has some value and to increase its value, or to take something with no value and create value. It's to make wealth. Entrepreneurs make wealth. Employees make wealth, but they don't make it for themselves. They make it for their employers. So when you're working for somebody at $10 an hour, you're producing $25 an hour. Did you know that? That's right. When I'm paying you $10 an hour, I'm charging $25 an hour shop rate. A customer comes in, pays me $25 to buy 1 hour of your labor. If I can sell your labor for $25, could you sell your labor for $20 and discount it by $5 and take that business away from me? That's what competition is all about. Competition. Can you sell it for a little bit less? Now, we've been talking about what happens to your retirement income. So we looked at an article here in Reader's Digest. It concerned a fellow by the name of Ed Beltram. He worked for Lucent Technologies. He had a retirement program. He had expectations. He had desires. He had a fantasy. Probably had a college degree. Now he's working for $7.50 an hour. But don't feel too bad for Ed. He's still making $53,000 a year off of his retirement. But he's getting about as nervous as a whore in church. He and his wife, Sherry, are really concerned about the future. If Lucent Technologies can cut them back the way they have over the last few years, they can cut them back over the next few years. And now they're beginning to realize that, wait a minute, these promises that were made to us can be broken. Who else breaks their promises? Well, government breaks their promises. And our chief economist, Alan Greenspan, made an observation the other day. He said, we've got to tell people that the government has made some promises that they're not going to be able to keep, especially to the baby boom generation. The expectations of the baby boomers, like Ed Beltram, are greater than can be physically produced. So all of you baby boomers out there are going to be very, very disappointed. Well, if you're expecting to be tooling around the country in a Winnebago with $5,000 a month in spending money produced by somebody else for the next 25 years when you retire, you're going to be very, very disappointed. Now, a few of you are going to succeed in doing that. I mentioned the chief executive officer of Disney. He left there with a $200 million retirement program. Jack Welch left with I don't remember the numbers now, but it was millions and millions of dollars of severance pay and retirement and stock options and so on from General Electric. But remember, those guys actually put some bales of hay in the barn. They got paid for what they produced. I'm not too sure that Ed Beltram over here or that the baby boom generation has actually produced past tense. And as a matter of fact, I know they haven't. Now, they probably believe they have based upon the expectations that they have developed, based upon the promises that were made to them. But Alan Greenspan used the term irrational exuberance to describe the buying in the stock market in the 1990s. And he pointed out the other day, testifying before Congress, I said the other day, it's a few months back now, that the expectations of the baby boom generation are greater than government can deliver. And he said, you ought to start telling these people to rein in their expectations. It gets worse than that, though. Here's an article from MSN Money by Jeff Schnepper. S-C-H-N-E-P-P-E-R. You can get this from moneycentral.msn.com. moneycentral.msn.com. Five nasty tax surprises. Yeah. Five truly nasty tax surprises. Not only does Lucent Technology go back on their word and deliver less than they promised, but the government does the same. Now, remember the famous Bush tax cuts? President Bush was elected in his first term, railroaded through a bunch of tax cuts over there. God, wasn't that wonderful? Thank God for the Republicans and cutting taxes. Well, it's true, they cut the tax rates, but they increased your taxes. They didn't cut them any. Yeah, that's right. Now, if the president came along and said, we want to increase your taxes, you didn't want to hear that, and you wouldn't vote for him. But when he came along and said, I'm going to cut your taxes, that's what you wanted to hear, and you voted for him. And the president delivered on his promise. He cut your tax rate from 42% to 35% and increased the dollar number, the tax that you're paying, with what's called the average minimum tax. So when you get through paying your average minimum tax, you're going to pay more dollars in taxes than you've ever paid before. And I'm going to show you that. Here's five truly nasty tax surprises. Sure, you may think that you're a responsible taxpayer, but the U.S. tax code is filled with complexities that can blindside you and cost you a ton of money. Now, I'm a guy that doesn't like surprises, and especially nasty surprises. But the Internal Revenue Code is full of nasty surprises. When you least expect it, the tax law can hit you with a lot of taxes that in your wildest dreams you didn't even know that you might owe. Here are five to keep your eyes out for. It's called, number one, the Responsible Party Surprise. The Responsible Party Surprise. Congratulations. You've just been invited to serve on the prestigious nonprofit board of directors at your local church. Surprise! You have just exposed yourself to potential taxes that cannot even be discharged in bankruptcy. Let me repeat that. You have just exposed yourself to potential taxes that you couldn't discharge in bankruptcy. It's called the Responsible Party Rule. So if your charity has employees, and then income, and then Social Security and Medicare taxes have to be withheld on the compensations that's paid to these employees, those taxes are held in trust by the charity or the employer for the IRS. Now, if those taxes are not paid to the government, the IRS can not only go after the charity, but anybody serving that organization who qualifies as a responsible party. Here's the rub. You can be that responsible party without even knowing it. That's because a responsible party is anyone who is under a duty to collect or account for and then pay over to the IRS any tax. So if you can tell the bookkeeper which check to pay, then you are a responsible party. You see, we're not just talking about a charity like the SPCA. The rule extends to boards that run churches, synagogues, schools, and the like. But all is not lost. There's a special exemption for unpaid volunteer board members of charities. But to get that exemption, you cannot be involved in the day-to-day financial activities of the organization. And you cannot have any knowledge of the failure to fork over the taxes that are due to the government. In other words, you must be uninvolved and unaware. Now, that's not normally the kind of board member that charities are looking for, especially when you can be held liable for fiduciary failure if you don't get involved. Otherwise, you are responsible. Now, the rule also extends to the for-profit world. Let's say that you're the company bookkeeper, and your boss tells you that there's a cash flow problem, and that you should pay suppliers rather than to pay the payroll taxes. Here's the nasty surprise. You now, the bookkeeper, become the responsible party. And you're either going to put your job on the line, or you're going to be personally liable for any unpaid taxes. So do not look for fairness in our Internal Revenue Code. Don't look for any fairness. It's nothing personal, it's just money. Second is the debt discharge surprise. Congratulations again. You convinced your credit card companies that unless they reduce your debt balances, you are going to file for bankruptcy, and they are going to get nothing. So they generously lowered your liability by $5,000 so that you can pay off the balance over the next 24 months. Now here's the nasty surprise. That $5,000 reduction is now counted as ordinary income to you and could cost you as much as $1,750 in additional income tax if you're in the 35% bracket in 2005 and 2006. So much for getting your cash flow in order, chump. So unless it was sheltered by the umbrella of bankruptcy, debt reduction represents accession to wealth, which is clearly realized, and it is considered taxable income. Well, isn't that just real special? Then comes the Social Security surprise. You've worked all of your life, and you spend over 45 years contributing to Social Security. Every dollar that you contributed was taxed when it was earned. Now, you'd think that your money coming back to you from Social Security would be tax-free, since it was a tax when you paid it, and you paid a tax on a tax when you paid it, years ago, didn't you? It was tax-free. Years ago, they didn't tax Social Security, but one day government woke up and said, you know, it's there, and we can tax it, so we're going to. After all, you already paid tax on those dollars, but you're going to pay tax again on those dollars when you get them back. Well, if you think that those dollars should not be taxed, wrong again, O aged one. Depending upon your income, as much as 85% of what Social Security pays you may be subject to income tax. Some people call that double taxation. The government disagrees and says that you're getting your contributions returned tax-free in the 15% that is not taxed. God, makes you just want to run down and join Social Security, doesn't it? Well, I see their position now. I just have to live to be 168 years old in order to fully get my own money back. Now there's the unemployment surprise. Like many other people, when the economic boom of the 1990s turned into a bust, you lost your job. At least you have some unemployment compensation to help pay the rent and to put food on the table, right, Bob? Well, historically, unemployment compensation was meant to provide a cash flow, a floor, to keep you off of welfare. But welfare is a state expense, so it's really not a major concern of the IRS. Here's the nasty surprise. The IRS wants a piece of your unemployment check also. Unemployment compensation is taxed just like any other ordinary income. Thank God for President Bush. Then there's the marriage surprise, joint and several liability. You know, most married couples file joint returns. And that's because joint returns normally provide a lower total tax for a couple than they would pay if they filed separately. And if you're married on or before December the 31st, those usually are the only filing options that you have. Filing jointly, however, creates what the tax pros called the joint and several liability. And what that means is that both or either spouse is responsible for the full tax. It's not apportioned based upon who earned it or who had the deductions. The IRS can come after either party for the full amount owed. So here's the nasty surprise. 2 years ago, you filed a joint return with your spouse. Last year, you got divorced, and you have no idea where he moved to. So the IRS audits your joint return, and they discover that he had an under-the-table job while you were married and didn't report $20,000 in cash income. Because you either knew about the unreported income, or you should have known, the IRS now wants you to pay all of the taxes owed, perhaps as much as $7,000, and they want it paid by you, Mary. Now, he got the money, you got the shaft, and since you signed the joint return, you're fully liable for the taxes owed. Oh, the marvels of taxes. Now, you can ask the IRS for relief as an innocent spouse, and you can qualify as an innocent spouse and be relieved from some or all liability from a deficiency on a joint return if you did not know about the understatement of income and tax. If you had no reason to know about the understatement of tax, and if it would be inequitable to hold you responsible for the deficiency. The item at issue need not be grossly erroneous, nor does the understatement have to be substantial. You apply by using Form 8857, and you can also get to the form by going to the IRS website and search for the form. You must apply within 2 years from the date that the IRS begins collection actions. For more, see Don't Let a Cheating Spouse Stick You with the Tax Bill. Remember, this little piece came from Joe Schnepper, and it comes from moneycentral.msn.com. moneycentral.msn.com. While we're talking about taxes, let me take you through another little drill over here on taxes and show you how the government screws you. Most people see the government as being a beneficent father figure. It is. Actually, government is a god. That's why the first commandment tells us, "You shall have no other gods before me," and then follows that up with four statutes, four laws, four instructions that say you're not to make covenants or contracts with foreign and alien gods. Well, you went down and made a contract with a foreign and alien god called the USA Incorporated when you got your Social Security account, then your marriage license with the state, and then you made some more contracts with your governments, with your foreign and alien gods, when you got a business license, driver's license, marriage license, Social Security number, and on it goes. You could have as many as 37 separate contracts with state and federal government agencies if you put your mind to it. 37 of these contracts. And each and every one of those contracts binds you to a set of rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, unemployment insurance, and on and on and on it goes. Ah, the power of contract. Well, we've got that power of contract with Social Security. Now, let me show you how Social Security and the IRS team up to rob you blind. We saw here that now they're going to tax you on the proceeds. So let's suppose that you're making $50,000 a year. Get your pen and paper out here, boys and girls. Sharpen your pencil on both ends. Make sure that we've got plenty of lead in our pencil. And let's do the arithmetic. Watch this. If you've got an income of $50,000, you know, you're driving truck and busting your ass day after day, working 18 hours a day, and cheating on your two log books so that you can get in more time, so that you can get in more miles, so that you can make that magic $50,000 a year, then you're going to pay 15.3% of that $50,000 in Social Security tax. So write down $7,650, because that's 15.3% of $50,000. It's $7,650. $7,650 in Social Security taxes if you're self-employed paying 15.3%. All right, partner, now, when you go to pay your income tax, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 and then pay your 17% for income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of $50,000 a second time? I mean, come on, partner. Put $50,000 up there and then put 15.3, multiply that, and you get $7,650. $7,650. That money goes out the door. You got to write a check for that and send that in 4 equal payments now to the feds. That $7,650 is gone. Before you do your income tax, they've already got that $7,650. What you've got left is $42,350. Shouldn't you pay your income tax on the $42,350? They've already got the $7,650, haven't they? But you know, the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of $50,000 in Social Security tax, don't they? Then they make you pay 17% of $50,000 in income tax. So write $50,000 up there and then take 17% of that, and that's $8,500. So you got to pay them $7,650 to Social Security and then $8,500 you got to pay for the income tax. And you're paying 17% of the $7,650 twice. Can you see that? That's a bookkeeping trick. And isn't that just real special? It's a hell of a neat bookkeeping trick. That way, they make you pay them 17% of the $7,650 twice. You paid the $7,650 once, and then they're going to make you pay 17% of the $7,650 a second time. Then, after you've done that for 45 years, they're going to tax you on 85% of what they sent back. Not only did you pay the tax, not only did you pay a tax on a tax, now you're going to pay the tax on the tax on the tax. And you voted the straight Republican ticket? You voted for a tax cut? Hey, that ought to make you feel just real good today. Now, shouldn't it? Now, always remember, when God told you not to have any other gods before Him, He wasn't whistling Dixie through a straw hat. And when He told you not to make any contracts with these foreign and alien gods, like Social Security and income tax, He wasn't whistling Dixie. He gave it to you straight from the shoulder. Now, you gave him the finger and you said, kiss off, I'm going to cut a fat hog in the back. Well, all right, partner. As my old granny used to say, you made your bed, sweetheart, now go sleep in it. All right, now we're talking about retirement. Is your retirement at risk? I would say that if you're relying upon Social Security as a retirement vehicle, and you're getting taxed, and then you're getting taxed on the tax, and then they're going to tax you on the taxes that you've already paid when they return it, I would say you're getting screwed, blued, and tattooed, wouldn't you? Back in 1978, I saw that one day, and I said, you know, I think I'm going to opt out of this program. Now, the numbers in my case were this. By 1978, between 1950 and 78, and that's 28 years, and I started paying income tax or Social Security tax back when I was 11 years old. I signed up for Social Security. Would you believe it? 11 years old. Started delivering newspapers for the Humboldt Standard in Eureka, California. And as the years went on, I paid into Social Security until 1978. By 78, I had paid in $12,000 and some change. If I had continued paying the tax from 79, 89, 99, I could have retired and been on Social Security today, retired, collecting my rocking chair money, as they used to call it. My rocking chair. Well, I could be living off of other people right now today. But, of course, I made a bad mistake, and I dropped out of Social Security back in 1978. Went to my class reunion a couple of years ago, told them I dropped out of Social Security, and everybody around me, you know, they wanted to get away from me as fast as they could. That's crazy. This guy, Gordon, must be a lunatic fringe. Why, this guy's mentally disturbed. God knows what he might do next. A man that would drop out of Social Security, a man that would live his life without paying Social Security taxes, and then not sign up for his rocking chair when he gets to be 65, why, the guy's got to be a raving lunatic. Well, so be it. But if I had continued paying into it by 1978 through the year 2002, I would have paid in an additional $141,000. Which means that I would have paid in $141 plus $12 is $153,000, and then I would be eligible to draw $805 a month forever, or until I died, whichever came first. Now, since the law of averages says I'm going to die about age 75, then I could have drawn for about 10 years, maybe 13 years max. Well, let's just do a little arithmetic here, boys and girls, and let's see what I was going to get. $805 a month times, now remember, if you live 10 years, you get 120 months. So let's take 120. I was going to get $96,600 back. But now my government comes to me and says they're going to tax me at ordinary income rates on that $96,600. Let's round it off to $100,000 just so that we can keep track of it. So they're going to give me $100,000 out of my $150,000 back. So they're going to charge me $50,000 to give me back $100,000 of my own money. The money, remember, that I paid in over these 45 or 50 years. Well, then they're going to tax me, aren't they, about 17%? Well, then they're going to tax me $17,000, so they're only going to give me back $83,000, aren't they? So I'm going to pay in $150,000, and they're going to give me back about $85,000. So I'm going to have to pay $65,000 to have somebody write me 120 checks. Let's see, how much does that come to? $65,000. Now, let's divide that by 120 checks. I got to pay $541 for every one of those 120 checks. Now, honest to God, boys and girls, do you believe that I'm so damn incompetent that I need to pay somebody $550 to write me a damn check for $805? No, sir, boys and girls. Little Georgie ain't too smart, and I never went to college, and I ain't got no degrees after my name, but I don't need to pay anybody $541 to write me a check for $805 to give me back my own money. So I kept that $141,000, and I invested it in something else. I ain't going to tell you what I invested it in, but whatever it was. Hell, if it was airplane gas or wild women and song or a crap table in Reno, I couldn't be any worse off than I would be with Social Security. And that's why I told you, boys and girls, I pray every day that God Almighty will spare me from the curse of retirement. Hang on, we'll be right back right after this report. Hey, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. In addition, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, newsletters, and so on to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, or they're religious, or they're economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint is not endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. So just because I recommend them doesn't mean that I necessarily endorse them. All right, now the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. So don't blame them. Blame me. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, now we've covered the Figge report. We covered Bill Bonner's report. And we took a look here at five truly nasty tax surprises. Now, remember I said the other day that the average guy looks at the numbers and says, my God, unemployment's only 5%. In spite of the fact that they've exported over 2 million jobs and they're going to export another 2 or 3 million jobs, I guess I ought to tell you that the jobs that they're exporting are $25 and $30 an hour jobs. I mean, you know, when Delphi fires these people that they've got hired, or they reduce their pay and their benefits, they're going to reduce them from $65 an hour in pay and benefits down to approximately $27. So they're going to get $12 in cash and $12 in bennies instead of $27.50 in cash and $35 in bennies. That's the way that deal's going to come down. Then they're going to export those jobs over to China where they can pay those guys $2 a day. And hey, those chinks over there can make those parts for $2 a day just as well as you guys can for $65 an hour. So the gravy train is over, and if you don't think that your pension is in trouble and that your dreams and fantasies are coming to a sudden screeching halt, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy again, boys and girls. This is going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth time. That's an old biblical proverb, weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. Then they tell us that inflation's only 4.3%. Well, get your pen and paper out there again, boys and girls, and let me give you another drill Let's take a look here at the economy. Our government tells us that inflation is running at 4.3%. They lie a lot. The truth is, inflation is 10%. And just let me demonstrate that to you. Can you name anything over the last year that's gone up in price less than 10%? Or less than 4.3%? Just think about it. Gasoline, housing, food, plywood. You know, the week after Katrina, plywood doubled in my local building materials store. Doubled! Twice as much for plywood as it was before Katrina. I just wanted to point out to you boys and girls that when you see prices going up, they're not going up 4.3%. They're going up 8, 10, 12, 15%, double digits, just like housing. Now, of course, if you're not buying plywood, housing, gasoline, gold, silver, food, there's probably no inflation in your budget. But for the rest of us out here, inflation runs more than 4.3%. But for the sake of our story here, I'm going to take the government's number. It's 4.3%. My God, if you can't believe your government, who can you believe? Now they tell us that the economy is growing. And it's growing at 3.4% a year. That's phenomenal. 3.4% growth. Just take 3% compounded annually for 25 years, and it doubles. I mean, look, if you're making $50,000 a year this year, and you get a 3% raise every year for the next 25 years, you'll be making $100,000 a year in 25 years. It will double. So when your economy is $11 trillion and it's growing at 3% a year for the next 25 years, in 25 years, the American economy is going to be $22 trillion a year. That's growth. Everybody wants growth. And they tell us the American economy is growing at 3.4% a year. God, that's wonderful. I'm impressed. Now, here's your arithmetic problem. How does that benefit you? Joe Sixpack, driving a truck, making $50,000 a year. All right, Joe, get your pen out there. Sharpen your pencil now on both ends. And let's write this number down. You're making $40,000 a year. Okay? Just take $40,000, put it down on your paper. Multiply that times 3.4. And I think you're going to get $1,360. 3.4. You're making $40,000 a year. The economy is growing at 3.4% a year. That means that you should get $1,360 more. You should make $41,360 in the year 2006. Got that, Joe? All right. Now remember, we've got an inflation rate over here of 4.3%. Now the difference between 4.3% and 3.4% is 0.09%. Try it, Joe. Put it down. 4.3, and then underneath that, write 3.4. Now I know that there's decibels in there, and this is tough. This is a tough problem. But can you see here that if the inflation rate was 4.4%, that the difference between 3 and 4 is 1 full percentage point. So if you take that 4 that's under the 3 and you borrow 1 from the 4, which gives you 13, take away 4 is 9, that's 0.09%. It's 0.9%. It's nearly 1%. Now here's what that shows you, Joe. You take that 0.09 and you multiply that times 40,000 and that's $360. Now here's what that means. That means that if our economy grows by 3.4% this year, and we have an inflation rate of 4.3%, that $40,000 that you made in 2004 will buy $39,640 worth of goods in 2005, which means that you lost $360 in purchasing power in 1 year. Now, when you apply that to the national economy, that means that the economy is in recession. Recession. It's not growing at the rate of 3.4% a year. It is contracting at the rate of 0.09%. per year. Can you see that, Joe? I know you've been to public school and that's a hard problem, but that's the bottom line. The economy is contracting. Now, the reason that we have a 3.4% growth rate is because the money is being expanded. The Federal Reserve is printing more money in credit and loaning more money out. And if you read the Magombo Guru report every week, which I want to give you the name and number, go to Kitco, KITCO.com. Remember, these newsletters are free now. It doesn't require any money out of your pocket. It just requires some of your time to educate yourself so that you can see what the hell's going on around you. Because remember, this week's question is your retirement safe? Is your pension plan safe? You pilots and airline stewardesses, you airline flight attendants at United Airlines and Northwest Airways and so on, Northwest Airlines. And pretty soon American Airlines and Delta Airlines are going to do the same thing. They're going to scrap their pension programs, turn it over to the government. You'll get 50 cents on the dollar, and believe you me, the government's going to pay you the whole 50 cents. They're going to make you dependent, and then once you're dependent, they'll give you the whole 50 cents. And if you reduce your dollars to loaves of hillbilly bread, it means that you're going to get half as many loaves of bread, which are going to be inflated until the whole $50,000 will not buy one loaf of bread. Now, that's where we're headed. So if you think that your pension is safe, get after it. There isn't a single pension program or a single pension plan in the entirety of the United States of America that you're going to live to collect on. And you people that are collecting on your pensions now are going to live to see your pension destroyed right in front of your eyeballs. That's how bad that's going to get. And I gave you in the last program the Figge Report. You could probably get this Figge Report. It's an address by Harry E. Figge, Jr. He's the chairman and chief executive officer of Figge International Incorporated, the founder of Action Group to Save America's Economy. You know, that's a dead letter issue. If you were to write to Figge International at 4420 Sherwin Road, Willoughby, Ohio, the zip code 44094. You got that? 4420 Sherman? No, Sherwin. S-H-E-R-W-I-N. Sherwin Road, Willoughby. W-I-L-L-O-U-G-H-B-Y, Ohio, 44094, Figge International. Tell them you want that little 13-page booklet, Tackle the Debt Before It's Too Late. See if you can get one. I've had this thing for about 10 or 12 years. I keep it over in my file cabinet. Every once in a while I bring it out. It's a prophecy that has come to pass in our lifetime. Not exactly on the same time schedule that they predicted, but it's come to pass right in front of our eyeballs. And it's coming to pass over the next 10 or 15 years. But unemployment is only 5%. Yes. But unemployment isn't being reported. Let me describe this unemployment report to you. Here's the way unemployment is reported by the Department of Labor. You're working today, right, Bill? All right. Now, your company lays you off, and so you go down and sign up for unemployment insurance. You can draw unemployment for 13 weeks. And so they're going to put you on the list. So first of all, they'll say, well, this week, unemployment new claims were 300,000, 320,000, or something like that. Those are the numbers. There's about 2 million people that are carried on the unemployment list. 300,000 of those people file first-time new claims this week. And you can draw unemployment for 13 weeks. And then in some cases, if there's a hardship case, you can come in and get a second 13 weeks. Now, remember, 13 weeks is one quarter. 26 weeks is 6 months. So you can draw unemployment insurance for up to 6 months. All right. Well, if you get 300,000 people that are joining every week, you got 300,000 people that are coming off of the system every week. And they come off of the system in one of two ways. One, they find you another job and you go to work for somebody else. That's the happy scenario. Or you reach 26 weeks and they drop you off of the list, whether or not you have found another job. So what you have here are millions of people who have drawn their unemployment insurance and they're still not working. And they may not be working because they don't want to work. They may be like the Ozark Hillbillies that we have around here. See, we have a vibrant economy here in Ozark County. Let me describe it to you. It's a wonderful economy. 65% of the people in this county are retired on Social Security or some other form of retirement or both. 65%. 27% are unemployed, which means that there's only 7% of the population. Is that right? 65, 75, 85, 92. That's 8%. Only 8% of the population of Ozark County is employed. Hell, more than 8% of the population of the county are children. They don't even work. Isn't that special? I'm just giving you the numbers as I got them out of the newspaper. 65% are retired, 27% unemployment rate, and that leaves 8% left over. And hell, there's more than 8% children in the county. I don't know who in the hell does the work around here. I'm unemployed. I don't work for anybody. Now, I'm one of the chronically unemployed. I've been unemployed since 1978. I'm not looking for work. I don't have any income. I'm not on unemployment insurance, workman's compensation, and I'm not retired. At least not retired in the conventional sense, although I retired from business back in 1978. I just wanted to share that with you to let you know that you don't need to feel bad for the people of Ozark County. We're all making it quite nicely. The 27% that are unemployed and the 65% that are living off of you. God bless all of you. Now go to work, pay your taxes, and support us here in Ozark County. We love you for it. We love you for it. But I'm not running across very many people here that are missing any meals there that are upset about it. So you got 300,000 people over here that are drawing new claims every week. 300,000 are dropping off. The unemployment rate is 5%. We're exporting about 1 million jobs a year from the United States to India, China, and the Philippines. But we're replacing those jobs, those manufacturing jobs that pay $27 an hour, with $5, $6, or $7 an hour jobs like this guy here. Remember Ed Biltram? He's working for $7.50 an hour. He was working at Lucent Technologies. We don't know what he was getting paid, but it was something more than $7.50 an hour. I'll bet he was getting paid $20, $30 an hour. He was a personnel executive there. And he's drawing $4,300, isn't it now? $4,000 and some odd. Did I write that down? $4,467 a month. $53,604 a year in retirement benefits. Plus he's got some medical benefits, plus he's making $7.50 an hour, and he's still not getting what he thinks is due him or what he ought to have, and maybe he's not. Maybe he was promised a whole lot more. I don't know what Ed was promised. I just know that he's not as bad off as he could be, and he's not as bad off as he's going to be. I think old Ed out there better be thinking about something, doing something a little different than $7.50 an hour. I think that's kind of a waste of his time, effort, talent, and ability. But anyway, that's a choice for him to make. All right, now we're reporting now on, is your retirement at risk? And remember, the government tells us unemployment is 5%. The truth of the matter is unemployment is 12%. 12% of the American public that would like to work isn't working, or they're underemployed, or they're working like Ed Biltram here, who is fully employed at $7.50 an hour. But the guy is underemployed when we take a look at his talent and ability. you know, a guy that's a college-trained personnel executive at Lucent ought not to be working in a on a golf range. I mean, this guy is doing a job that a 15-year-old kid should be doing after school, for crying out loud. But he can't do because you got all these work rules that are imposed upon you with this socialist communist manifesto. Used to be when I was a kid, you know, you got out of school after work, you went to work someplace and learned a skill or a trade. That's the kind of work that high school kids used to do when I was a kid. And here you got a man getting paid $7.50 an hour, and he's holding down a full-time job? $7.50 an hour. All right, so the government's lying to you about unemployment. It isn't 5%, it's 12%. They're lying to you about inflation. It's not 4.3%, it's 10% plus. The economy is not growing at 3.4%. It is contracting at 0.09%. Now, number four, housing prices are strong. Housing prices are strong. Nationwide. My God, let's take a look at the housing story over here. We got a couple of minutes. We'll get you started. Let's take a look at finance and economics. Here's a report that comes from www.theeconomist.com. It's called Finance and Economics, the Global Housing Boom, In Come the Waves. This was published June 16th, 2005. I got about three or four of these articles here on the housing boom. Now, I think real estate's a wonderful program. I'm all in favor of real estate. I'm in favor of buying a house for $30,000 and then going in there and working on that house and fixing it up and doing all the things that need to be done to it. And then turning around and selling the house for $60,000 and making a little profit on it. I think that makes all the sense in the world. That's what creating new wealth is all about. That's where you take something that isn't worth very much, and then you go to work on it, and you put in new equipment, or your labor, or your ingenuity, something that you do, and you make it worth more money. And you sell it to another buyer, or somebody else says, well, yeah, I'd like to buy this $60,000 house. Now, that makes all the sense in the world, but that's not what the real estate boom is all about. What real estate speculators are doing, they're going out here and they're buying houses, and they'll buy a house for, let's say, $300,000, and they'll hang on to it for 1 year, and then they turn around and they sell that house for $325,000, and they make a $25,000 profit on this $300,000 house, and they do that in 1 year. They sell it, and maybe they make, you know, $10,000-$15,000 or something, and they use their credit to do it. And this is called flipping houses. Sometimes they make more than $25,000. But they're not really adding any new value, and this money is coming from the Federal Reserve, and it's what we call a Ponzi scheme bubble, and we'll tell you about that story next time, right here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review tomorrow night. Now remember, you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an editorial review. It's heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, remember, just go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about, is your retirement safe? So until then, good night, friends.